Hey everybody, it's Lee. I know we're heading into the off season, so we wanted to give a shout out to our title sponsor, NHL Sense Arena, one more time. And again, we have a coupon for $50 off an annual subscription when you use Hockey Never Stops at hockey.sensearena.com. I always like to remind everybody, I've been using this thing for 6 months and I'm just blown away, not just from the VR aspect of it and the virtual reality side of things, but the ability to give different perspectives of the game, whether I'm playing as a goaltender. And I got to admit, it is really hard, but it has really given me a perspective from that point of hockey, which has made me a better coach and a better ice hockey player. Or the skater modes, which help you work on cognitive skills and other things like heads-up play that you don't normally get to work on in a practice or a game. So I implore you to check it out. It helps us out. It helps them out. Support our title sponsor, NHL Sense Arena. Get $50 off an annual subscription when you use Hockey Never Stops at hockey.sensorina.com. Again, that's Hockey Never Stops. That's the code at hockey.sensorina.com. Check it out. And without further ado, enjoy this episode of Our Kids Play Hockey. Hello, hockey friends and families around the world, and welcome back to another edition of Our Kids Play Hockey, powered by NHL Sense Arena. The whole trifecta is here. Christy Casciano Burns, Mike Benelli, and I am Lee Elias. And today, we are privileged to have two men who have made an impact in the game of hockey in different ways. Neil Smith, known for being the president and GM of the 1994 Stanley Cup champion New York Rangers, has led a hockey life. As a freshman, Neil was an All-American defenseman with Western Michigan University. He was named captain of that team the following year. After being drafted and some time in the minor leagues, Neil graduated to management and soon won Calder Cups with the Detroit Red Wings organization as a GM. In 1989, Neil was hired by the New York Rangers and oversaw that team's emergence during a pivotal time in both Rangers and NHL history. Not to mention, he was the architect of some of the biggest moves in NHL history, which included names like Messier and Gretzky. You might have heard of them. Neil is a highly regarded hockey executive and broadcaster, whose experience we'll definitely dive into today.
Vic Morin is an Emmy Award-winning
NHL broadcast veteran who has had a hockey in his blood from the start as a fan, player, production manager, and many more. The William Patterson University graduate, which is funny because that was the arch rival of my school, Montclair State University, has authored multiple hockey books and has been a mainstay in hockey and sports broadcasting, which includes the Olympics, football, and more. It also includes a 30-plus year career with ESPN, where he has spent a lot of time doing hockey. Vic and Neil have known each other for over 30 years and recently started the NHL Wraparound podcast with the goal of sharing no-nonsense opinions and news and issues around the National Hockey League. I have listened to it. It is fantastic. You should all take a look at that. We will try not to be too much nonsense on our show today. Neil, Vic, welcome to Our Kids Play Hockey.
Love being
it's
here.
Really good to be here. Great to be here. We were looking forward to this. We were talking about it all week, so it's fun to be with you guys.
All week. That is a compliment, my friend. Well, listen, we're not going to talk all week today. We're only going to talk for about an hour. But I want to start by first congratulating you both on your podcast. Needless to say, you started with a boom. For those of you who haven't listened yet, the guest list from the first six episodes includes names like Wayne Gretzky, Craig McTavish, Keith Tkachuk, and Brian Burke. I want to know, guys, what was the inspiration for starting this show now, and how has it been received?
Vic, you go first.
Sure. I separated from ESPN at the end of June of last year, and Neil and I had been in pretty regular communication kind of leading up towards that. And in early June, actually before my last days there, Neil reached out and said, you know, we should do a production project together. And without really knowing what went into podcasting, I said, well, how about a podcast? And from there, it gained momentum. We teamed up with a company. And from there, it was just, just to focus and get this thing launched in January, which I felt was just perfect timing coming into the stretch drive of the NHL. And we've just had a blast doing it. It's not only fun to do the shows, but as soon as we put a show in the can, it's also planning the next show and what you're going to talk about. So we've had a great time doing this up till now, and hopefully we're doing it for many years down the road.
So give us a little flavor of the show for folks who haven't heard it yet. Sell it to us. What's it about? What kind of topics do you dive into? How do you come up with the topics?
Well, that's a great question, and something that we spend a lot of time thinking about when we were thinking about what our mission statement would be for the show. And really, the thing that we like to say is that we're going to make sure that by the end of the show, you'll learn something that you wouldn't have known if you hadn't listened to it. That's really important, that something has to be out there that you didn't know before you tuned in. The other part about it is we're both historians because we're so damn old. And so I go all the way back to the original six, watching that when I was a little boy. Vic goes almost back that far. And we have great recall. Both of us do. And it's fun when you meet somebody that has the recall that you have, because you can go tit for tat about things that have happened in the past. So we bring that to the show as well. The other thing is that Vic has a huge Rolodex, to use an old phrase, and I have a huge Rolodex. And so people like Wayne and Craig McTavish, Kevin Cheveldayoff, others that are well-known, nationally well-known, have been very kind and obliging to come onto the show. And also we have a stable of people who have already said yes, and that we're keeping them in a queue, hopefully to use them, you know, have them down the road. So we like to bring current topics, current people with current opinions, but also marry it back to the past and things that have gone on historically, so that you can understand where the game is today. You can get a understanding from hearing what it was like before and how it evolved to where it is today.
You know, guys, when I think about hockey podcasting, and this is why I love your show, there's so many hockey podcasts out there, right? And the I don't want to say it's a problem, but the holdup for me is that most of the shows are kind of fan opinion based, right? Which, look, it has its place, right? That's the community of sports in general. But when I look for a podcast, I'm looking for that in-depth kind of viewpoint that maybe I don't have. And that's what I think you both bring to the table, right? Because, and again, for those of you who don't listen to the show, it's usually really great interviews and then a breakdown of kind of the NHL as it stands at the time of the show. And I really appreciate that, because I'm getting insight from professionals in the game that, again, make you think, right, about these teams and the NHL in a different way. It's not just complaining about what's going on, or actually, probably more importantly, you're not creating rumors. I mean, we just saw that happen in Philadelphia recently. Where, you know, a crazy rumor was brought out on a podcast and it caused a lot of hoopla. And then the other thing too, is in your questioning. And I have a lot of respect for this and a lot of appreciation for this as a broadcaster. You're asking Wayne Gretzky questions I've never heard him asked, right? Mm-hmm. If you search Wayne Gretzky online, there's so much information. You can hear his speeches, you can hear his talks and his stories. But you guys asked him questions that I have never heard him answer. That's so fresh, right? Especially for someone as high profile as Wayne Gretzky and the other, I'm not trying to take away from the other athletes and people that you've had on the show. But I just got to tell you, I appreciate that as someone who wants to listen. And like, I always joke, like, it's like the airlines, right? We know you have a choice when listening to podcasts, you know, we want to thank you for listening to ours. So, I love that you guys took that approach in a very busy broadcast world.
I think both of us really appreciate those words. And, you know, even with Gretz, you know, obviously everybody asked him about Alex Ovechkin, and we decided to spin that towards Auston Matthews, who would like to be the heir apparent. So every question, you could take mainstream topics, but it's really what you do with them that is going to differentiate. And so whenever we get into Q&A, and we had Brian Burke on last week, right, who was just terrific, talking about the Penguins, talking about the PWHL, and we want to come from places that has to make them think also about their answers. You know, we don't want to throw softballs. We want to have fun. We want to be engaging with them. But at the same time, the method of our Q&A is to take either mainstream or non-mainstream, but whatever approach we take, make them think about their answers. And to your point, Lee, come at them with something that maybe they haven't been asked before, or ask it in a different way that's going to elicit a different answer and really enrich the experience for the listener.
Yeah, well, I think that as a journalist, as a broadcaster, even as an executive, that's how we educate each other, right? By asking great questions. We always say on the show, great questions demand great answers. I want to turn this a little bit now into to your collective experience, especially for the audience listening, because as I said, we have a lot of coaches, we have a lot of parents listening. And one thing I want to ask both of you is to talk for a few minutes about culture and its importance to being successful. So obviously, whether it's competing for the Stanley Cup or managing a live production, the ability for the team to work together is everything. So how did you both approach architecting teams that could perform at the highest level?
Well, for me, I mean, my leadership position has always been what you know it as, and that is in hockey and professional hockey, and climbing the ladder to become the general manager of an NHL team, which that day that that happened, I was scared out of my mind. And then, of course, you get anointed president and GM, which was the first time ever that a original six Rangers had the same man be both positions. And so it's really important. Character is the first and very top ingredient in making anything successful. If you look at an organization that has been very successful, I don't care what it is, from donut making to, you know, ice hockey, you look at the very top of the pyramid, and if that person has good character, there's a chance that you could be extremely successful down the road. If the person at the top of the pyramid lacks in character, there is no chance that you're going to be able to be ultimately completely successful down the road. And as you go down that pyramid, it's really important that you keep hiring and putting onto the team high character individuals as you go down that pyramid, so that every layer of that pyramid has a lot of character in it, a lot of integrity. Decision-making is properly done. It's not done with ego. It's done with what's best for this organization. I'll give you an example just with our podcast. Vic and I have no ego going into this thing. I mean, our ego days are behind us because his ego was involved with his television production, and rightly so. My ego was involved with winning and losing in hockey games. And on the podcast, we don't have an ego. Like, we're trying to do the best we can. So we collaborate on every single little thing, including this background that's behind us. We collaborated on making that, ordering that. How do we do things? And that's the way I think a successful team has to operate. What's best for this podcast, not what's best for Vic and makes him feel good about himself, or whatnot. Not making sure that everybody knows that Neil won the Stanley Cup in 1994. It's about what's going to make a better podcast. So, and that has to be like that in everything in life. If whether you've got a team in Peewee or Bantam or Midget or whatever the names are today, maybe they've changed. You got to make sure you get good character people, and especially the coaches have got to be character individuals. It's so important that young people learn from character people. It's their starting place. It's their roots. It's where they're going to want to go, you know, where their mind will take them back to later in life when they make a decision. Subconsciously or consciously, they'll go back to what they were taught when they were very young, not only from their parents, but also from their coaches. Their coaches are going to teach them about teamwork, something parents can't completely teach them. But the coach and their teammates will teach you that. I know that's a long answer, but character is the number one ingredient.
Well, and Vic, before we turn to you, and Neil, yeah. I love that answer because I think we all believe that character development from both a team and an individual point in youth hockey and youth sports in general, it's part of the job that you're volunteering for, right? Obviously, hockey skills, hockey tactics are part of it, but the ability for the coach and the village, for lack of a better sense, to build that character from an organizational standpoint, I think are essential if you want to become a successful organization, right? And I always say that I appreciate parents that volunteer, but you got to know what you're volunteering for. You're not here just to push pucks around and to make sure the kids get off the bench in order, right? It's a little bit more than that. And that comes from the top. That comes from the hockey organization, the director of hockey, to make sure that that's portrayed. Now, Vic, turning to you, I've worked in broadcasting. Christy's worked in broadcasting. I've been in a live production room. I don't think a lot of people know what that's like. I don't think they understand the chaos, or really sometimes it's organized chaos that happens. But you have built some amazing production teams over your time. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your keys to success?
One of the things that amazes me, and I've been in the industry for over 39 years, and the one thing I have always found remarkable regarding television, and particularly sports television, where so much what goes on is spontaneous, is the chances of something somewhere to go wrong and how seldom it does. Now, I've been a part of a few things that have just completely gone down the toilet and have looked bad, sounded bad, but overall, the amount of times that there's so much chaos, and yet so seldom does anything really go markedly wrong. But to your point, and you know, to follow up on Neil, there is so much to be said about leading a team and bringing the right people and having them buy into a core vision that is best for the overall project. And it's in television, it's in coaching. I spend time in coaching. There's that delicate balance of also knowing how to deal with individuals within a team concept, that some people need the pat on the back, some people need the kick in the butt. And it's very important also that when you do have those moments that you're dressing down, or you're talking to somebody sternly, that the ending message is that it's uplifting and that there is hope for that individual. So there's a lot of different ways to build success, be it on the ball field, on the ice, or in a production control room. There's that level of competitiveness that I know Neil and I have, that you always want it to be the best it can be. And there's a lot of paths to getting there. And that's part of the fun part, is trying to find that path for each individual and each team that you're involved with.
I always like to say too, and Christy, you could probably talk to this too. You know, when you see an NHL team play a game, or you see Christy go on the news at night, it looks very smooth sometimes, right? How it gets to that point. But it's the behind the scenes stuff, you know, is where all of that is made. And I always say to kind of hockey fans, we see so little of what's actually going on. And it's the same in television. You see so little of what it takes to make this product look as good as it does, right?
It does.
And it's amazing, really, because that, like I would say, there's the rub, right? Like and when you look at it from youth hockey to the NHL to television, that's where the work is done, you know. And we've heard all the cliche sayings of, you know, you practice hard so the games are easy. The amount of training that goes into hockey and broadcasting is insane. Neil, to your point earlier, one of the sayings that I love to when I do team building, excuse me, with all the teams, and whether it be from pro all the way down to the youth, I always give this, it was given to me by a Marine, but there's a lot of arguments about where it came from, but this ideology of team, teammate, self as a priority system, and that you can always bring that to the table. Are you putting the team first and then your teammates and then yourself? They're all important. They're all equally important, but it's how we prioritize them that matters, right? And I imagine for the highest levels of success, you talked earlier about removing ego. The ego falls away and everybody is in sync with that priority system.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, you can't have, I mean, and it's very similar to the military. I have a very close friend who spent 23 years in the military, and including in halo jumping and all kinds of scary stuff, you know, behind enemy lines, Yemen, Afghanistan, Iraq, and even the stuff he talks to me about no man left behind and other things that make you chill, and they give you chills the way they have to approach this in a much tamer sense. It's the same thing when you're team building in any team. You can't be successful. Can you imagine in the military if you had egos getting in the way, or you had stuff like that, how many people would literally die from that? So take that to this other level. And yeah, the integrity is so important. And again, getting back to what we're all here to talk about, it's so important for adults to have integrity in front of children, in front of young adults, in front of people, that because they're going to pick up on everything. Their file cabinet is not very full, and so there's a lot of room for new files to go in there. Our file cabinet, mine is jammed, like, you know, it's falling out of the drawers. But young people have a lot of space in their file cabinet, so everything you do goes into that file cabinet. All your body language, all your different things goes into that file cabinet, and it's stored for later for them to pull back out and use in their own life. And so think of how important everything you say and do in front of a young person is when you think about it from that perspective.
You're so right there. I just witnessed it this weekend. I was invited to go watch a skills competition with 7U. So these are tiny little kids out there. And the parents in the stands were cheering, and there were four different teams out there battling it out with different skills. It was so fun to watch. The parents were cheering on every single kid out there. It didn't matter what team they were on. And you know what? After that skill competition was done, the little kids were out there congratulating each other on their own. And I think a lot of that came because they felt that positivity from their parents in the stands that we're all in this together. We're 7 years old. We're out there battling out. And the parents are cheering for all the kids, not just their kid. And I think that spilled out onto the ice. And you saw that. And I was sat back and go, oh, that never happened when my kids were out there years ago. It was like, go get them, you know. And I thought that's parents are getting it. Parents are getting it. And the kids emulated their parents, and they went out there and they were, you know, congratulating each other. I thought, that's really good. Maybe the culture's starting to change since when we were had our little kids out there doing skills competition. It was good to see.
Yeah. It's such an important message also, because for every example that Christine, you just shared, you can go onto the internet and find high school brawl, kids brawl, somebody punching an umpire or a referee in a hockey, baseball, soccer game, whatever it is. And I think we're at a real crossroads here because it's so important not to let these negative instances become more mainstream and that it's acceptable behavior. So it's so important that the message that you just shared, Christy, is it gets out there, people see it, and, you know, just as if there's negative stuff out there, it can grow momentum. Same thing in the opposite direction with positive messaging. And I think, you know, the way the country is now, and there's so much divisiveness, to show true unity for a common cause is one of the best messages that can be delivered.
Yeah, and start young. Don't wait until you think, oh, they're not gonna get it, they're only 6 and 7 years old. They get it.
Oh, they get
watch.
It
they're listening they get it. To you they're
that's Neil's you. File cabinet right there.
maybe it's almost also a good time, you know, get, you know, break in somebody like Neil and ask, like, so we see, like, today's NHL, right? And we watch, you know, obviously a lot of people on around here follow the Rangers, and you watch, you know, everybody leading up to a player that obviously is a very skilled hockey player, but comes out and says, okay, the only reason I'm going to tune into this game is for a, you know, a bout that's going to happen. And there's going to be a fight in this game. And that's, everybody's looking up to it. Mike, you know, Neil, you had, Mike Keenan in behind the scenes, you know, so you really saw how the sausage gets made that a lot of people shouldn't see, but I think we, on our podcast, and we talk about this a lot, that's at the professional level. That's at the very top. That's when people's lives are literally on the line for a job. Like, they could get fired tomorrow. If this doesn't happen, then this is going to happen. And I think, you know, maybe you guys could talk a little bit about, you know, how do we as parents of youth hockey players differentiate between the two? Because
Mike, are you saying it's not the same? Are you trying to say that youth hockey is not the NHL?
No, I want it to be the same. Listen, if my team lost, in Norway, I would skate my kids for 4 hours after
hire the head coach.
But I think this is what happens now. Like, we all, as youth hockey coaches, fall into this, like, look at the winners. Look what they do. Look at the intimidation that they use. Look at the way that coach coaches their, they call them kids. They're not kids. These are men that are paid quite well that have to be in a gladiator mindset. So maybe you guys could talk a little bit about, and I know you probably don't broach this too much on your show, because it's not a youth hockey podcast. It's like, you know, really real hockey fans that want to hear like what's happening in NHL. But maybe you guys could talk about like where, you know, what can we do to understand that there is a difference, and that, you know, you got to get our players to that place first before you can start asking them to do with like pro, you know, pro people do.
Well, in my mind, I think, and you know what, Vic can speak to this as authoritatively as I can, because he has two young men, sons, young adults that he's helped get into, become good athletes, and I'll let him speak to that. But in my life, I think the main thing that young parents need to remember is that you need to talk about what's an example within youth hockey, not an example within the NHL. So if your lust to get your kid to the NHL, or your lust to get to some way emulate these heroes that you have in the NHL, you can't, you said it right, Mike, you can't bring that down to the 8, 10, 12 year olds. Don't bring that down there, because it's a totally different thing. It's not the same. And you don't want to emulate what's going on in an NHL game. You're not at that level that you can do that yet. You want to be getting through the basics of the game before you start worrying about one-timers at the point through a bunch of guys, or blocking shots when you're 8 years old. I mean, whatever the example would be. And so it's really important that you remember, okay, here's where we are now. We got plenty of time to go there in the future, but where are we right now? And keep concentrating on the now, because that's what's important. And I think that gets away from parents, because of course they're sitting there, they're in their late 20s, 30s, the parents are, let's say, they're watching basically younger peers play on the ice. So in other words, it's not like me watching NHL players now. They could all be my son. It's you know, you're in the same age group type thing, and so it's natural to want to do that, but not to the children, not to the kids. Don't bring that to them. Bring it to yourself if you want. Understand how hard it is to play the way that Jack Hughes plays. Understand how hard it is to play the way Zibanejad plays, because you're that age and you can, you know, gosh, how could I ever do that? But don't bring Zibanejad or Panarin down to an eight-year-old, because there's no correlation whatsoever between those two. But Vic, you should talk about your kids.
Yeah, well, my older boy is studying sports management at UMass, but when he was pitching in high school, you know, had a big arm, but has now, you know, gone off on a different path. Conversely, my younger son goes to the same school that Red Wings head coach Derek Lalonde played goal, which is the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts. And even though we're talking baseball as opposed to hockey here, I'm going to go in the opposite direction of Neil, where, you know, you kind of see, you know, the players and the young kids and you can't emulate them. And in working with Jake, this was a kid that hated working out, hated doing stretching, hated doing any of the prep work. And about 3 or 4 years ago, it just clicked for him, where he works hard, he studies the craft. And I said, look, the odds of you becoming a Major League Baseball player is infinitesimal, but you are among the 7% of high schoolers that go on to play college sports. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the ride. You're obviously there because you can play, and that you're not dropping off. You're there. You're an athlete now. Enjoy it. Field, hit, throw, and wherever it ends, it ends. And more likely, it's going to end, and you're going to be a psychologist, which is what you're studying. But for now, just enjoy where you're at. Don't worry about having to get to that next level. If it works out, great. And if it doesn't, that's great too.
You know, Vic, you brought up some great points here. We talk a lot on the show about present moment awareness. We had some great guests on previously, so, you know, be where your feet are at. Yeah. And we talk all the time to coaches about you got to meet these kids, no matter what age they are, where they're at. Because if you're not, if you tell a 9-year-old, look at Panarin, you're literally forcing them out of the moment of being nine, right? Yeah. I had a great conversation with a parent the other day, and this parent really wants this Mite team to win the games, even though we don't keep score. And I explained to her that, look, I understand what you're saying, but we need to teach the kids to be competitive before they can compete. And I said, there's a difference between those two things. And I said, being competitive is like walking or reading. Some kids get it at different points, and you have to be patient with that. You know, well, my kid doesn't compete hard enough. Your kid is seven and goes to preschoolers in first grade where they're teaching them to share and be nice to each other. So it's not shocking to me that they don't want to go on the ice and steal the puck, but we can teach them how to be competitive at practice and explain to them, this is a game that you want to win. That's the skill that needs to be developed at that age. It was a great conversation because I think the parent understood of like, look, obviously we preach at the youngest levels to have fun, love the game, because if you don't love the game at that young age, you're not going to play beyond a certain age anyway, right? If you don't foster a love of the game, but we can teach them to be competitive. And that was the key moment for her of, oh, you're not just teaching them happy clapping and, you know, holding hands, which isn't the worst thing in the world anyway. But you got to meet kids where they're at. And again, when you get up to 12 or even 18, right, you got to meet these kids where they're at within their development and where they're at. And you made a great point there, too. Some kids, it just clicks early on and they got it and they want to practice all the time and they're in the garage or in the basement and it's all they do all the time. Never compare your kid to that kid if they don't want to do it. We say this on the show all the time. You can cultivate a love, but you cannot create it. Right, you cannot put your love of hockey into your kid.
That's right.
Right. So, but you can cultivate it. You can create an environment, right? Yeah. Yeah. But it's so important. And you both said it, right? And look, I imagine this goes beyond youth sports, right?
Sure. Even it does. We get to,
So, I just think it's a really important point to you're both emulating it right now in your answers, of just you got to meet people where they're at. If you go and reflect on the past too much or the future too much, they can't do the work in the present if you don't present them with that environment.
Vic, I should tell them. I don't want. I'm not going to tell them the whole story, but how I survive day to day, personally. You know, you said something, and I know you were picking up on what we said, but I just want to go back to that point, Lee, for a second, and that is that even throughout your life, and this is going to sound really like Grandpa Smith here. You should always try to be where you are in your entire life, and you should enjoy the journey and not keep looking towards the destination. It's so easy to say that. You read so many books, Eckhart Tolle, on and on and on about live the now, live the now, live the now. But I'll tell you one thing. Life's going to throw something at you at some point, and you're going to have to live the now. Because you won't survive if you don't. And if you are so wrapped up in yourself that all you're thinking about is the future and regretting the past and hoping for the future, you're not going to do well. And that goes for any age you are. It goes especially later in life when you start to have, you know, stuff hit you in the face that you didn't really want. It's really important. But even for children, can you imagine how we all think back on our childhood and go, gosh, I wish I could relive that. I wish I could relive this part. I wish I could relive college. I wish I could relive, you know, being on that championship team I was on when I was 10 years old and the fun and the thrill of that. That was bigger than the Stanley Cup when I was 40. You know, and the reason is because, you know, sometimes, and it's natural in life because this is how we compete in society and how we get ahead is we're thinking future, you know, like, well, tomorrow I'll be better than I was today and so on and so forth. But it's so important to try to teach young kids to live in the moment and live where they are right then and stop thinking about what's it going to be like when I'm in the ninth grade. when I'm in the seventh. No, think about the seventh. You'll get to the ninth, I promise you. You'll get there. But just, you know, it's really important in life to stay where we are.
You know, I'll speak to that too, Neil. Thank you for sharing that, my friend. I appreciate the vulnerability there. You know, I do, again, a lot of team building. A lot of my team building is mindfulness. And I started doing it with 7, 8-year-olds. And what I was told was they can't do many meditations. They don't have the attention span. They're better at it than the adults. And what I tell people is that, you know, it's funny because the this is another saying people have heard, but, you know, the first in the youth areas, you're putting stuff in their minds. So you teach a kid at 7 or 8 to be present, you know, they can start picking up on that and planting seeds. When I work with adults or older hockey players, a lot of it's more taking stuff out of their minds.
Yeah.
Right. And that's life in a microcosm in a lot of ways. But you're so right. And I think that's part of coaching is, you know, if we look too far ahead, even the next game, like if you're practice, be at practice. Right. And we might be preparing for the game, but you're here now. Right. And look, for everybody listening, your mind is completely wired to wander. Like that's how the human brain works. So you don't have to be angry with yourself if you end up in the past or the future. Like that's normal. The key of it, though, is can you recognize and be conscious that you're leaving the present moment and then gently bring yourself back? And that's not easy. That's Neil, what you were alluding to. That's the exercise. Right. That's where the work comes in. But I think once you're conscious to it, there's really no going back, right? It's like being born again.
You know, I'm going to stop after this, I promise. But you meet people that can't get out of the rabbit hole, whatever rabbit hole they're in.
Right.
Lost their job, lost their spouse, whatever it is. And that's because they can't do what you just talked about. They can't pull their head out of that place that they're in and get it back to right now.
Right.
So if you've been fired from your job, take Vic for just use my partner here for an example. If he kept going back to, I was 35 years at ESPN and they laid me off. Like, this is horrible. It's like, you know, I must've done something wrong. I must've, I thought I was better than that. But he stays in that mindset. He's not going to be able to do this show. He's never going to be able to develop it with me. He's not even going to be able to say, yes, I'll do that with you. He's just going to stay down in that rabbit hole, and he's going to lose so much going forward. But if he can, which he does, obviously, pulls himself, whenever his mind goes down there, he says, no, I'm not going down there. I'm going back to where I am right now. That's the key. I'm not going there. I'm staying where I am.
And that's so much a matter of what your mindset is. And look, you know, I've had my share of setbacks and unexpecteds over life. But in the end, it's always ended up in the right place. I may have not liked something that happened at the time, but it's always ended up in a good place. And in November of 2022, when Bob Iger came back to Disney, I had already survived five different periods of layoffs of literally thousands of people. And I'm thinking, you know what? This one may be the one. And so you prepare yourself for it. You keep on doing what you're doing. But when the time came and you know, you have this pit in your stomach. You think, oh, my God, this is going to be the worst thing ever. And boy, when I got the call that day, I was almost relieved. And they said, we're going to pay you for another 2 months. And I'm thinking, OK, in as much as I saw the layoff coming, I'm like, something else is out there. And I didn't know it right away. And of course, then Neil calls 6 weeks later. And it turned out this was it.
Mm.
So it's a matter of having a healthy mindset. It's also challenging yourself every day not to get into that depressed mind shaft or a place that you don't want to be in. And it's easy to say that, but to actually put it into practice, have a healthy mindset, challenge yourself to be better every day. And it doesn't have to be something grandiose as doing a podcast. It can be the smallest tasks of you know, doing a good job painting in your basement or whatever you do, if you challenge yourself to do it better, then it's going to be healthier for you. It's going to be healthier for the people around you. And I think that that message, as it goes to our youth, challenge them, just small pieces. It doesn't have to be anything big. But if you challenge yourself in small spaces, you'll be able to tackle the bigger ones much better once you get there.
So I'm wondering, how do you tie this in? And maybe, Neil, you could speak to this, because you have to change people's lives in your profession all the time. Like, somebody has to get traded. Somebody's got to get moved. Somebody might be at the end of their hockey career. That might be it. Like, okay, this is – you just – like, we're talking about it right now with, like, the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? People are saying, oh, my God, like – we might have to blow this whole thing up. Like, what's the debate? You know, are we debating? Do we hold on because of prosperity and just, you know, feeling like, oh my God, this is like, this is something that should be right. Like, so how do you deal with that? And then maybe we could talk a little bit about, cause you guys are, you're hitting the nail on the head right where we are right now. We're in like tryout season and little kids and parents moving from one organization to another. Do I stay in the organization I'm at? Am I happy where I was? How can I change things? And you think about that as a parent, you're in the car with these kids, having these conversations on the cell phone, and you're talking to other coaches and other parents, and all these 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds are sucking all that in. Like, they don't listen to you when you tell them to get off the phone, but they are hearing you all the time. And I think, like, so I guess for me, it's like a 2-part question. Number one, how do you work with the pros on making, you know, having those conversations about moving a player on you know, moving in a different direction? And then maybe how conscious do we have to be about not letting our players appreciate how great they have it now? And it doesn't always have to change. It doesn't always have to be in a place they're not ready for. It doesn't always have to be the challenge of, you know, moving up. It just be happy where you're at now. And I think more and more we see it where people start being unhappy in November. Forget about April. You know, they're not happy in November. So then they go November, December, January, February, and they're always moving. So I know it's a little over the place, but maybe a 2-parter.
You know, as far as the NHL goes, or pro hockey, which, because I was also in the American League as a general manager for a long time, and I was also chief scout. So there's different levels of bad news there or good news, you know, or you're always giving some news, hiring, firing. I mean, you just have to have compassion for the person who's hearing the news and understand where they're coming from. And that, you know, if you're trading Mike Gartner at the deadline when he's got kids and a wife and didn't want to be traded and has his one chance in his long Hall of Fame career to win the Stanley Cup, and you're trading him on the deadline of the year that you win the cup. You just got to be compassionate to him and his wife, Colleen, and to their kids and how this is going to disrupt their family and so on and so forth. There's nothing you can do about it to change it because you've made a decision that's in the best interest of the greater good, which is the Rangers and their fan base and their ownership and the rest of the team. But you should have compassion for that individual, and not just treat it like, you know, he's a piece of meat that you're going to take off to the, you know, you've just traded to a different farmer. I think I can tell you my minor hockey, I went quite far as a player, I think. I mean, I was All-American in college at Western Michigan. I played in the minors for a couple of years. I wasn't good enough to make the NHL, as it turned out. I was at training camp in 1978 with the New York Islanders. Pretty good training camp if you think about Potvin and Bossy and Trotsky and Gillies and all these guys were there.
Not a lot of room there, huh?
Yeah. And, of course, I'm wondering why I'm even there, you know, like because you were skating around with these guys. But in any case, so I had a good career. I mean, parents, if Vic said it about his son, I mean, if you can get your son to go as far as I went, you've won the lottery. I mean, it's never mind the NHL. And I know there's 32 teams now and there's 50 contracts on every team. So you've got 1,500 contracts out there or whatever it is, but, that's still a minuscule amount compared to who plays the game and plays it all over the world. You're not just competing to make the NHL with Americans and Canadians. You're competing with, you know, Slovaks and Russians and whoever, Germans and Swiss and on and on. So, but what I want to get to is I remember countless times, it's so painful to coming up stairs from the locker room. My mom was waiting upstairs because my dad died early. And she was a hockey player. That's how I got into hockey. And I'm crying because they cut me. They just cut me from the team that I was trying out for. And, but I always tried out for teams that I probably was just on the periphery of whether I was good enough to make it or not, but I wanted to try for it because, you know, and so naturally what happens, you get cut a lot when you're trying out for a team and then you end up, because the season's going to start, you end up going to a team lower down and you try again the next year. And that was that day's hockey. I know today, you know, you have tryouts in June or something, but all that crying and all that stuff still was good. I think it was good for me in the long run because I tasted defeat a lot and got ready to understand what it's like that you, I'll fast forward this, you win the President's Trophy in 1992, you've got a Stanley Cup team, you go up 2-1 on the Penguins, you get knocked out. And the Penguins go on to win the Cup, never lose another game. That was 1992. And that hurt that you've got to deal with until the next year's playoffs when you get another chance. And story be told, we didn't have another playoffs that year because we missed the playoffs the following year.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, that pain, you know, that you're trying to get rid of. But one thing is it hardens you to that because you're going to get defeated. Nobody wins every game. Nobody makes every team. Nobody. And so there's a learning process there. But again, I hope, Mike, I've answered your question in as best I can because I know it was a longer question. If I haven't.
It comes down to it, right? Compassion and knowing that this is a human being. And then we bring it down. And I think that's where personally, in my experience at the youth hockey level, that's where some of these coaches forget about all those other pieces. Like that, you can't just post a bunch of names on a board and run away. You know, there's some responsibility to have a conversation about, you know, if you're, and we've had these conversations in other podcasts about like preparing for tryouts and selecting a team, going to the right place that for your kid. But, you know, the responsibility from, and you guys both hit on it multiple times earlier, that, you know, this is a process of development. This is a process of compassion. This is a process of, you know, putting a family and educating them as you go through the hockey system and knowing that, okay, why'd you get cut? Well, you got cut because of this, this, and this. And what can you do better? Well, you know, really you can do this, this, and this. And where can you go? Well, we could recommend you go here, here, and here. I mean, there's a lot. That's what I think great organizations do. And I think at your guys' level, you know, you do that too, right? I mean, you know, Vic, too, you have interns all the time. I'm sure you can't keep them all. You're like, oh, my God, these are all great people that are helping us, you know, in the production side of things. But we can't keep everyone. So somebody's got to go. And then when that person goes, I don't know you at all, but I'm hearing what you're saying. And I'm hearing, I'm thinking you probably go and say, hey, we can't keep you. But here's some recommendations I can give you about what you can do next.
Well, I think to address that and also go back to Neil's point about, you know, that everybody's going to get defeated at one time or another. And one of the best things that I remember from just trainings and seminars and all these things about leadership and learning how to, you know, to move forward and coping and all that stuff, very simple. And kids can identify this in a second. This is one of the greatest tools. It's a climbing wall. And in order to get to the top, very often you're going to reach a certain place. But in order to take the next step, that next step may be lateral or it may be backward before you can move. And I think that if kids can identify with that and tie it into, okay, now I understand disappointment. I understand that I may have to take a step sideways or backwards before I can advance. It's such a simple tool to get in their heads that, oh, okay, you know what? This may be okay. And oh, by the way, climbing the wall is fun. And so it's all part of a learning process to help them move forward.
Yeah. And I have to bring this up now too, for the parents listening. That's part of the process. We always say that there's no correct route to getting where you want to go. And that supports that theory, right? Your ability.
How many of us go this way?
None. Right. Nobody. Like, I always talk about the path to championships. It's not a straight line. It's up and down. You know, Neil, you talked about it too. Sometimes it's over years, right? Actually, Neil, to your point, I just finished Messier's book, No One Wins Alone. He talks about those years on the Rangers as well, as we had to learn. We had to learn. It was very painful. But as a parent, part of the process is teaching your kid to deal with that type of adversity, and that it's not really what happens to you. It's how you respond to it.
Yeah. Right.
So many parents are lost in the, well, how do I get to tier one? And once I get to tier one, how do I get to the best team in tier one? It's not a straight line. Some of my best years of development were off a team I didn't make because I was hungrier, or I understood that pain, or I was motivated. So I think part of it is part of parenting in general. It's not just part of sports.
Yeah.
Is the ability to not give your kids the excuse. Well, you would have made the team if this kid or this coach did this, or you did that, or you would have scored if this teammate passed you. That's not the right message, right? The message should be, okay, this didn't happen. How are we going to respond to that not happening? What can you control that's going to allow you to get better in this situation? When you get to the professional world, whether it be broadcasting or hockey, it's only going to get harder. Neil, you said it. The failures will come more often, right? Because you're not going to reach the pinnacle without failing. It just doesn't happen. I can't think of any story outside mythology where, and usually mythology doesn't happen, where you just get to the end and you won. It doesn't work that way. All right.
You bring such a great point with that. And there's such a simple saying also is success often is determined with how well you deal with plan B.
Right.
Because everybody's got the plan A, which is the success and the stardom and everything that comes with that. But it's also not realistic. So you better have an alternate plan in mind. And that little phrase really speaks to that and to what you were saying.
Yeah, and we're seeing it real time, right? With a kid like Connor Bedard, that every youth hockey player is wearing his jersey right now. And you watch this kid's trajectory. He's moving up. Breaks his arm. He finds a way to train. He finds a way to persevere. Boom, boom, boom. He's going. First couple of weeks in the league, boom, he breaks his jaw. Now he tries to find, now he's got to come back and he's trying to find a way to persevere. Like there's those players that know how to swim upstream and, you know, and find their holding points and then go. And I think that's where, you know, that's where the great people become great people. Like that's why these stars in any profession can get there, because they understand that the adversity piece is just a growth piece for them. And that mindset of, okay, well, that sucked. Let me think how I can do this. I think the problem at the youth hockey level right now is that there's people just use the excuse of, oh, he got cut from that team, I'll just go to another AAA team. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That AAA team, I'll make a AAA team. Oh, that didn't happen, I'll go. You know, so there's less and less and less of climbing the ladder now. And we need to, and that's, you know, that's really one of the reasons we're on this show every Monday, is that, you know, having those conversations about, well, how can we make this a better place for all our kids in sports that understand that we want to have that adversary. Like this is when we want it. We want it when you're 8. I don't want it when I'm 63. Yeah. Like I want it now.
And you know what, Mike? I think that and people would have a hard time seeing this like right up front, but the level of gratification that is garnered through overcoming adversity to get to a goal is far greater than just being able to take an easy path there. So that's where the great lessons are for kids, is that, you know, you overcome it, it actually feels better than if it was just there all along.
And you see this play out in pro hockey all the time. All those great dynasties, all those great teams, they had someone or something they had to overcome. We talked about the Rangers, President's Trophy to no playoffs. You can look at the Oilers having to get past the Islanders. I mean, the Red Wings at one point couldn't win. The Capitals couldn't get past Pittsburgh. There's always something. The Philadelphia Flyers can't find goaltending. That's a joke. But my point is that there's always something that you have to overcome to go there. Christy, I didn't mean to cut you off. Please,
oh, no. I was just going to say sometimes it's not so much overcoming as it is adjusting the sails.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, you just have to. Something happens. You think you're on this course. All of a sudden, the unexpected happens. You adjust your sails. You're in a different direction, and you make the most of that. And sometimes it can take you on a much better path. You don't see it at the time. And that's where you have to be resilient and say, okay, I'm going to roll up my sleeves. This is what I had planned. There's another plan here, and we're going to make the best of that. Sometimes it's a case of pivoting, you know.
Christy, you can relate to this in your career, but you know, all of this that we're talking about, including even youth hockey is a growth tool for kids to become adults. In my view, it's the very best growth tool. Mm. It's teamwork. It's teaching how to stick up for your teammates, how to act with a group, how to have respect for your coach, on and on and on. And those life lessons will carry you very, very far. But we're in the entertainment business. All of us, really, when you think about it, we're in the entertainment business. And you can go over to another group, and that's actors, comedians, and so on. The failures that these people have throughout their life to get to where they are. If you talk to Liam Neeson, the setbacks that he had during his career to become the iconic guy. Now, he doesn't see himself as iconic because he remembers all those failures he had. But as Vic said, but then when you get there, you know, it makes it even greater because you did go through all those tough times. You did lose to Pittsburgh when you were supposed to win the cup. You did miss the playoffs, and you proved that you were a great team and you won the cup the next year, for example. That's just one example. You were able to prove what you set out to prove, but your stick-to-itness and your instincts to survive a setback and not just go down the rabbit hole because of the setback. I mean, we've all faced that. We have to have, or you wouldn't be at the level you're at. And Christy, you're on TV. I mean, I've been on TV. I haven't been a regular on TV like you are, but there are setbacks you're going to have as you go through this. And it's those setbacks must make you even more determined to improve and get to where you want to go.
100%. Yeah. We have, you never know what's going to happen when you're on a live broadcast, right? You know that. Life hits crash, the producer messes up the rundown, no one's communicating to you. Yeah. And so you just have to figure out how to stay calm, how to look like there's nothing wrong. Yeah. It's a skill that I think, and even our young hockey players, I see it all the time. You know, players get sick, your lines get messed up, you don't have maybe your coach is sick, you have a different coach up there. So you just kind of figure out how to make the best with what you have and try and shine through it, right?
Right.
You know, and I'll say this real quick before I have a question I want to ask is, you know, in youth hockey, Christy, you're right, all the time. You know, last night, I'm really proud of my kids, but the elementary school team that they're on, we showed up and the other team had a bunch of kids, I'll just say, that probably should not have been on the roster that night from a much higher level. And, you know, we had people really uncomfortable on the bench. And I said, hey, it is what it is. Let's play the game. I said, I think we can win this game. And let's just play the game. Let's have the right mentality here. Yeah. You're not the summation of what the other team is. You're the summation of what we have on our bench tonight, kids. Yeah. And they won the game. You know, it's like it's all about how you put it. Now, if we had just worried about the AAA player on the other team the whole night, our whole game plan would have fallen apart. So you're right. This is a skill. And it's a collective leadership, right? You know, coaches, I always say, if you start panicking on the bench, your team's going to panic. Yep. Right. You might be panicking on the inside, but like Christy said on live broadcast, you got to smile if it's not going right. You got to give that you got to emulate the emotion you want out there. Listen, I want to turn to this question.
Christy has an article coming out about that soon,
too. Yes, I do.
Yes, Hockey Magazine. Check it out. I want to ask you both this question. I had it written down and I want to get it out before we run out of time. at the top levels, and again, we can equate this to youth hockey or anything. Talent is there, right? Talent's a prerequisite. Everyone's got it when you get to the high levels. And again, broadcasting hockey, it doesn't matter. I was wondering if you guys could give us a little bit of an in-depth view of how you choose people for the team. And we talked a lot about character, lack of ego, fitting in the right roles. Yeah. So I know that that's part of the process, but I want to know, like, are there questions that you ask yourself? Is there a process that you follow when you're looking at bringing a player in, putting a player out, or Vic, again, broadcasting the right person on the switcher is very important.
Yeah.
You know, what is the process that you both take personally to kind of put that equation together?
Go ahead, Vic.
I think from the TV perspective, and I don't choose the switchers. I was more involved in the production and not the technical.
Sure,
but yeah, it's the same thing, but more so in production, because you are actually creating the product that is going on the air. And it's a feeling on individuals in terms of how well they will fit within your team. And over the years at ESPN, we had a lot of people coming in that thought that they were just going to reinvent everything mm-hmm. that ESPN had ever stood for, and that they were going to come in and they were going to take the world by storm. And their shelf life was generally pretty short, because I think there was a level of cockiness and arrogance and know-it-allism. And it's a very detailed business in a lot of different ways, that many of which people don't even see. And so you get a feeling when somebody comes in, do they want to learn? Do they want to grow? How much do they want to take on? And one of the great lessons that I have always been able to share with individuals is when they ask, well, what's it going to take to make in this business? And I said, do everything. Mm-hmm. Even if there is something that you don't think you're going to end up in long term, if you have the opportunity to learn and grow and broaden your skill sets, do it. And that's all part of a person that really wants to blend in with a team, as opposed to the futile effort of having the team adjust to them.
It's hard, Lee, to equate what you look for in players, because you're not getting the chance to pick all, you know, to pick through them. You're drafting them, you're trading for them, you're signing them as free agents. So yes, you check on a lot of things. First of all, everybody knows everybody in hockey. So if I'm trying to sign player X, I can find people that know this guy and know his personality and know his character and know what to expect out of him. So, you know, you have to have a wide array of resources to make sure that your thought process is right when you're thinking about this individual. In the draft, you're doing the same thing. You're trying as best you can to get as much resources in there to make the right decision. And let's face it, you only get about two players out of every draft, two NHL players out of seven picks, not even that, it's less than that.
Right.
So you're not going to always hit the ball, because you can't. But I think what I can relate to or talk to better than the players is the staffing and what makes a great organization. And what makes a great organization, again, we go back to the top, is that when the guy at the top decides to hire people that know more about some part of it than he does. He has a general overseer and orchestrator. But if I'm going to hire an assistant GM, I want him to have been a GM at some point.
Right.
I'm not sit there worrying about, well, he might take my job, which is nonsense. But I want a really knowledgeable guy. He can teach me stuff, because everybody's got knowledge that I don't have. And so if you build your organization that way and bring in people that know a lot more about their specialty than you do, which is going to be most people, to be quite frank with you, you know, if you're picking a marketing director, make sure that person knows way more about marketing than you do. That's what you want. And yeah. Don't let your ego get in the way and say, well, I can't have him around because, you know, he'll think he's better than me. He won't listen to me, or he won't this, or he won't that. It's all, again, it's all nonsense. So you've got to, in my view, you've got to, if you're picking people that don't have the skill set yet, like Vic's talking about interns and that, of course, you're going to go to their character. You're going to go to asking them about their where they grew up or how they grew up or so on and so forth and where they were educated. And you'll try to find people that know them so that you can get a bit of background on them. But if you're hiring people that are in the industry, I think it's really important to build a winning organization that everybody is very good at one individual thing that they know how to do. And if you, even when you get to hockey players, if you think about this, I've told hockey players, just do one thing better than everybody else. Every NHL player does one thing better, and then the stars do multiple things better. That's what makes a star a star.
Wow.
You know, if you're going to be a third line player, grind it out better than anybody else. Be able to grind it out. Be able to cycle the puck. Be able to go in there and get dirty and then get off the ice and let the stars come back on the ice. Understand that's what you're there for. You're there to eat up minutes while those guys rest. You know,
I'd love to ask you a question just on a player side. So it's real easy in hindsight to say, oh, Neil Smith got Mark Messier, wins the Stanley Cup, makes it easy, right? That's easy. The guy, you know, but what, when you had to go through the process, when your staff was looking at, okay, can we actually bring this guy in here? Do you, how much weight do you pull on the players that have to surround him? Because Mark will tell anyone that wants to hear that none of that could have happened without the players that were on that team. Like, and to your point, the players that did certain things in certain roles, you can't have seven Mark Messiers, although that, I guess that would be maybe him. He's a different story, but there you, but I think with you, like, how do you determine, like, okay, I could bring this guy in, a superstar, but how is that person going to fit within the puzzle and the pieces that I already have in place that he's just not going to be a high-paid player that gets us really no further than where we are now?
Well, you know, Vic watched this whole thing while I was building the Rangers as a Ranger fan, and his dad was a big Ranger fan, and so he's – and that's what we have in common a lot – other things. So before we really knew each other, that process was going on. And I got to tell you, the Messier thing is really funny because in 2024, the trade in 1991 looks like it was a no-brainer. There were articles written that I was out of my mind doing this, and here we go again, bringing in an old guy that's past his time and 31 years old. And, you know, he's banged up. He's been through so many games, and you're giving away youth to get this guy just the same way we always do here. And I had to believe that what I was doing was right. I wanted to change the culture of the Rangers. Now, I don't like saying things bad about what my predecessors were doing. So I'm not saying bad things. What I did know that was that the culture to win wasn't right, to win ultimately. I'd come from the Islanders earlier in my career. I'd been with Detroit building that up. I'd had two championship teams in the American League, which is just a mini version of the NHL. And I knew the mentality you had to have to win. So where do you turn to get that mentality and plug it into your organization? Well, go to the guys that have won. Try to grab guys that have won who understand the mentality. So nobody would understand it better than Mess. He had won five cups at that time. Of course, there was others that have won five cups, Kevin Lowe, Glenn Anderson, so on. But Messier, who wanted out of Edmonton at the time, was a captain, obvious leader. Everybody knew that. And so you take a chance. And I mean that, yes, take a chance, because you don't know what you're getting. You can't go in and say, how's your wrists? How's your knees? How's your hips? How's your, you know? And you hope that your theory is right, that in order to be a winner, I got to bring in a winner. And then you start to build around him with more people that are winners or that have won or that you think can win. And it goes all the way down to the coach. I mean, when I hired Keenan, I we had just missed the playoffs, and I knew that the group that I had with Messier at the front needed a certain type of coach, or else they were just going to eat coaches alive like they did to Roger Nielsen. Who could they not eat alive? Well, there's three guys at that time. Who there was Al Arbor, but he was coaching the Islanders. There was Scotty Bowman, but he was coaching Pittsburgh. And then there was Mike Keenan, who had just been fired from Chicago as the GM in Chicago. Mike Keenan had won Canada Cups. He coached high-level players. And my thought process was, okay, I need somebody that's used to working with high-level guys. And that's what Keenan was used to. Roger Nielsen, I love the man, but he wasn't good for high-level players. He was good for players who you needed to get to overachieve in order to get to some level underneath the championship level. If you put him with a team of stars, he would try to bring them down to, you know, the middle of the pack again, because that's how he knew how to coach. Mike Keenan was a guy that could push the stars and say ugly things to stars that they've never heard before. In fact, there's a Gretzky story about that one I could tell you sometime. But how I ended up with Gretzky was because Mike Keenan said some crap to him in the locker room when he was in St. Louis in front of the players. And that was it for Gretz. Was never re-signing in St. Louis with that kind of thing. So back to the point. The point is that you bring in in my theory was, get as many winners as you can into the locker room, and they know how to win and they want to win. Winners repeat. Championship players repeat. Yes, you can have a lot of players who are learning from those championship players. Not everybody that comes on your team wins the Stanley Cup for the second or third time. A lot of them win it for the first time. But they're going to learn, and the room is going to become a championship room because of those guys. So when I kept getting the Oilers, I mean, to me, that was the thing that was easier for me to say when Kevin Lowe's available. Yeah, I'd love to have Kevin Lowe. Plus, I could talk to Mess about him. When Tikkanen became available, yeah, well, I of course. And right down to the last ones that I got, Glenn Anderson at the trading deadline in 94, he'd played with Mess. He'd been Mess's roommate. Well, I didn't go to Mess and say, can I trade for Glenn Anderson? I knew that Glenn Anderson had championship experience, and we had to win that year. I mean, we were romping through the league. That was our window. And since Keenan didn't like Gartner, okay, well, if I can get Anderson, who's got five cups and he's close with Mess, that's gonna add to this base of high level players. But none of it was obvious. None of it was easy. None of it was without criticism. I mean, the trading deadline traded for four new players. It's now in the history books as the brilliance and the mythological trading deadline. But I'll tell you, at the time, if that didn't work out, I don't think I'm sitting here on this podcast with you guys, because my life goes in a totally different direction. And then
probably not.
I'm gonna look up Larry Brooks's columns back then and find out.
but also, Mike Lee and Chrissy, there's the foundational aspect of this entire 94 championship was the acquisition of Mark in October of 91.
Right.
And it wasn't just getting a five-time cup winner. It wasn't just getting a guy that had won a handful of cups, including one without Gretz
right.
in 1990. It was everything that was surrounding the Ranger franchise with the 54 years and the curse. And not only did you need a guy with championship pedigree, you needed a guy with a level of fearlessness that only Mark Messier had. And I'm convinced to this day that there is no way 94 happens with any other top-end player in the league with the exception of Mark.
Right, and you had Leach and Richter. But I think
they had to learn from Mark.
No doubt.
Mark had been there, and nobody played with an edge to the level that Mark played with. And if there's any doubt, go look at the 9 minutes of flying elbows and open ice blindside hits that Mark delivered during his career.
But I think that's the point, right? That didn't happen in 94. It wasn't like, oh, let's just put in here. And it was a build. Yeah, it was a process of building. It was like, right. Okay, here's one piece and put this in. Let's put this in. Oh, I don't really like this. Let's move this. Like there's always, I think people just say, oh, new coach, that player, they should win the Stanley Cup. I mean, I think it's, and we're seeing it like with Edmonton and like, you just, it's so hard. It's, well, you guys know you live it, but it's so hard. And it's so, and then you start seeing the mad scientists of the 10U kids trying to do that. And it just becomes like, this is not our purpose, guys. The purpose is not, you know, it's a long-term play. It's like me, I'm always, my contention is if you're going to pick a 10-year-old, you should have to keep them till their last year of Pee Wee hockey. Like that's like, if you really want to show me how good of a coach you are and a developer and a visionary talent acquisition person,
develop them,
pick a 10-year-old and then graduate them at 14. Then I'll see how good you are. But I think that's, you know, we just go, we all think we're NHL, you know, GMs. Like, oh, don't like that kid, 6 months, get rid of him. Don't like that kid, 6 months, get rid of him.
And yeah, I think the other thing, Mike, yep, I just want to add to that. And I mean, I watch this year after year and just I'm amazed and shaking my head about this. And that is that there, people think, some people think, not everybody, oh, he's a star player. Go get him. Add him to our team. We have to be better if we put a star player on the team. Let me remind you of Patrick Kane and Tarasenko getting added to a pretty good team. Go out in the first round to New Jersey. I mean, like it doesn't mean that when you add a star player that your team will be better. In fact, if you add a star player at the wrong time, your team will get worse because he will upset the whole apple cart because he'll go in and take the first power play. Somebody will be pissed off because they got to move to the second power play. Somebody will be pissed off because they're off the power play and on and on. And then that guy drives to practice with his buddy. Becomes pissed off for him too because he's talking about it in the car on the way there and on the way back. And the wives are mad and it goes on and on.
You know, that's my point is like, that is the dance, right? That's the ability to really start to see how do you put people in these positions and be, you know, have a crystal ball and figure it out how that's going to work. And I think it really is, it is, you know, that's why I laugh, you know, I go to the Garden a lot. It's a local place for me and there's not one person in the Garden doesn't know more than any GM in the Garden. So I understand that, but that's really where, you know, that's where we don't see that as, you know, fans can say, how come this person's not here? How come that person's not made captain? How can they name that person the captain? He doesn't know anything. You don't know that person. You're not in the locker room. You're not on the team bus. You're not on the plane. And I think that's where people have to step. And, you know, again, I realize the world we're in and everybody's live, everything's live, but step back. The people that should be there. And it must be so hard for somebody like you, Neil, too, to wipe out that noise, especially in a place like New York. You know, maybe if you're in, you know, where it's hard to name any city now that doesn't have a lot of media scrutiny. But you're basically, when you're in a place that like a Toronto or a Montreal or a New York, you almost have to wipe out the noise. And then it's funny at the youth hockey level, you need to do the same thing because we're seeing it in Facebook posts and Instagram posts and people get on the chat room. This, you know, this coach sucks. I go, he's the coach of a 10U team. How do you have this conversation? Yeah. You know, he loves your kids. He's always there and he's not chewing tobacco on the bench. Home run. You know, you guys are ahead of the game already.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this too. I know we're running out of time too. That, and I think this alludes to the whole conversation, is that the creating the environment for your goal could be winning a Stanley Cup. It could be developing youth hockey players, but the creation of that environment, which is a multi-year, sometimes decade-long project, is so important, right? And Neil, you said you can put all the all-stars on a team, they're not going to win if the environment's not correct. And I don't know how many, there's countless examples of this throughout history in hockey, but the world, it doesn't matter if the environment's not correct. And we said it too, you can screw up an environment. You've spent a lot of time dealing. It is not hard to destroy a team bond. It is actually quite easy and it can be done in seconds. It takes years to build it and it can be destroyed in minutes by a poor decision or the wrong person in the environment, especially if everyone's not collectively trying to keep that environment together. it's a very delicate process.
Sure is.
And I think that, you know, the best leaders, the best executives have a really deep understanding of that that environment has to be correct. And you have to understand that every environment is a little bit different. I mean, look, I had the real privilege of working for the Rangers, and, you know, my Flyers fans, my Flyers friends always kill me for this, but the Madison Square Garden is just a different place. I don't know how to explain it to people that haven't been there. It is a different environment than anything else I've ever felt. With that said, Philadelphia in the playoffs, when the team is good, it's a different environment, right? And if you don't know how to build the right team, and I could use the Philadelphia Phillies as an example. They understand that environment, and they still didn't win, which is another part of what I'm trying to say. There's nothing guaranteed, right? You can have a Stanley Cup caliber team. You can have a great 10U AAA team. Doesn't matter. You are guaranteed nothing, right? But that's why this is a process, because the pursuit of that goal, while wonderful and painful at the same time, that is the joy, is that you have the opportunity to pursue it. And I think that if we approach all coaching and life with that mentality, it creates a totally different outcome for everybody involved. If you know you can enjoy this together. Listen, before I close this out, I need to confirm this for Mike and Christy and myself. Neil, is it true that NHL GMs do not look at a player's 10U AAA record when selecting them for a team, or is that a pretty big prerequisite when you're bringing someone on board?
Well, you know, when I was training for Messier, I remember going through his peewee record and then his bantam record, and then saw how he played in midget. All we know about is how he played in college or junior, and that's it.
Okay. You heard it here first on Our Kids Play Hockey. Listen, guys, you've been very generous with your time today, but I do want to give Christy and Mike if you had anything else you wanted to ask or say before we jump off.
You guys are great. I got to tune into your podcast. I was hoping we could get more into just perspective now and then, because you're historians and you have such a great perspective on the game over the years. So I think we need to have you back for part two.
Sure.
I think we'll be there.
Look at that. Yeah, Mike, any more Victor questions before we go?
No. I'm just going to thank, that's the thing. I'm going to get these guys on and talk about Mark Hardy and, you know, all the boys back then. You know, those are really what I want to talk about. I want to talk to the old timer guys, Tommy Laidlaw and Kreshner and those guys. But I think, for me, it's just thanks a lot. Now it's just another podcast I got to download and listen to and tune into.
Mike, I got a suggestion for you. I know John Tinelli, and I think you should do a podcast with him, so it could be Tinelli and Benelli.
Oh, my God.
I talked to John Daly, and an unbelievable person. Got to watch his kids play up at Brown there. I mean, talk about a team, right? You got Tinelli, you got St. Louis. I think you got a bunch of guys on that team. So it's fun. Good, really good person around the.
I've known John since I was 18.
Awesome, another awesome human being.
Well, I want to hear a Christy and Gretzky. How's that?
There you go.
And I'm just happy being here. I'll just take whatever I can get.
Can't do anything with my name either. So.
But
awesome. Yes, we can. We can pick out a moron.
I'm sure you can.
The Moron Podcast. No,
Morin and Morin.
I want to thank you guys for being here today. Again, for those of you listening, check out the NHL Wraparound. I love that name for multiple reasons, but make sure you check out this podcast. It really is an in-depth look. It will give you insight into today's NHL and obviously some great interviews that you're not getting from some other podcasts. And again, that's what I look for when I'm choosing a podcast. So Neil Smith, Vic Morin, I want to thank you guys sincerely for being here. This has been a wonderful hour and a half almost, and I know that our audience is enjoying it as well. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, Lee.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey, powered by NHL Sensorina. Make sure you check out hockey.sensorina.com for your $50 off. Use the code HockeyNeverStops. That's going to do it for this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey. We'll see you on the next one. Skate on.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey. Make sure to like and subscribe right now if you found value wherever you're listening, whether it's a podcast network, a social media network, or our website, ourkidsplayhockey.com. Also, make sure to check out our children's book, When Hockey Stops, at whenhockeystops.com. It's a book that helps children deal with adversity in the game and in life. We're very proud of it. But thanks so much for listening to this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey, and we'll see you on the next episode.